Our movies, TV shows, and lyrics reflect our obsession with violence. The new novel, Going Native, looks at the culture of violence by telling the story of one man who leaves his family in their suburban home, steals a neighbor's car, and drives across America, hurting or killing the people he meets. New York Times book critic Michiko Kakutani described Going Native as a chilling and often brilliant novel that creates an alarming picture of a country pitched on the edge of an emotional and social abyss, a country already familiar from tabloid headlines and confessional talk shows, a country in which too many people pack guns and too many people come to violent, unexpected ends. Wright is the author of two previous novels. Meditations in Green was set in Vietnam during the war. Wright was an intelligence officer in the war. His second novel, M31, A Family Romance, was about a UFO cult. Wright says his new novel, Going Native, was inspired in part by the TV true crime show America's Most Wanted.
These were astonishing stories to me. It wasn't so much, the career psychopath who, begins at the age of five torturing cats and, you know, it's downhill from there. But what was really struck me as extremely fascinating were these tales of people who suddenly, for whatever reasons, just step out of one life and into another one. And, of course, they're ending up on America's Most Wanted, so it didn't turn out real well. It's a mystery. It's a mystery that I think I was kind of drawn to exploring. And at the same time, I think another reason I was intrigued with it, it just seems to me to be a very American, a culturally American thing to do. This whole idea that when things get too tough and you're in a tight place, you just escape. You just step away.
Well, you said you were interested in America's Most Wanted because in these reenactments you saw somebody stepping out of one life and into another.
Right.
Describe the life your character steps out of in the new life he creates for himself.
Well, the life, you don't get a real, good picture of it. In fact, you really don't get a real good picture of him. But the life that is shown at the beginning of the book, just in that first chapter, is suburban Chicago. The house, the wife, the two kids, the nice yard, the friends, and everything seems on the surface to be all right, to be what many people aspire to, and those that have it want to keep it going. And he just ends up at the end of that chapter disappearing from this backyard barbecue and into a kind of, romp across the western part of the United States that ends in things vastly removed from, that previous life.
Kidnapping.
Murder. Yeah.
We have an interesting structure in the book in the sense that the main character is barely in the novel. And each chapter is from the perspective of a different family or a different group of people into which the main character kind of wanders in and, causes some form of distress.
Right.
Tell me about creating that structure.
Well, I think as I said, I'm starting with a story that's very familiar, and I think a story that has kind of been overtold. And after seeing a number of these reenactments of this particular kind of person, kind of falling out of the legal life into the illegal, after you hear it a few times, you know it. That's the story. It becomes boring in a way. And I think that had I written the book in, the immediately easy way, is just to follow Wiley, I think it would have been more boring for me, and I think it probably would have been more boring for a lot of readers. So there was that element to it. And the other aspect of it was that when this happens in real life, what these people do has consequences, has major consequences. And these consequences don't seem to me to be dealt with often or adequately enough. So what I did is to just simply take the characters who probably in another book would be minor or secondary characters and move them into the foreground. Take the nominally major character and move him into the back and just kind of, switch the landscape around, just reverse it and see what would happen telling the story that way. And Wiley and that sort of person just became, in a way, more of a mystery. And so his story ultimately ends up being told by how it's reflected in these other people. And I think it kind of helped preserve the mystery of that. At the same time, I think it does deal with it, but obliquely.
I wonder if you've ever been a victim of violence or know somebody who exploded in an act of violence. I'm asking that because I realize it's the novelist's job to imagine and to make things up. But I think a danger that we all have now is that we spend so much time watching movies and reading fiction and so on, that there's always this risk of knowing what we know secondhand as it can filter through us through other people's fiction. And a danger that so many fiction writers have is writing things that they don't really know but that they've read about.
Right, right. And that's I think that's very much the topic of the book too, you know, a kind of secondhand experience. And then I think that leads to the flirtation, you know, with these things that you see, you know, in movies and books. Again, without really being aware maybe of what the consequences are, because it is so removed from you. But no, I never, was personally involved, well, other than being in a major act of world violence, and that's the Vietnam War. And I'm not so sure how much that really even has to do with you know, how this book ended up.
Well, you were what, an intelligence officer
in
Vietnam?
Yeah, yeah.
So you weren't doing like hand-to-hand combat?
No, that's right. And I was very, very fortunate in many ways that I don't have to keep dragging that, you know, behind me day after day. You know, there's just all too many people that is their life, you know, being a Vietnam veteran. And, it's pretty terrible.
Your novel is called Going Native. Would you tell us what the different levels of that meaning are in your book?
Yeah, well, it's... I'm not so sure if even I can. Of course, it's traditionally... I suppose that the phrase evolved out of the whole British imperialist experience. I think it, you know, probably first manifested itself in India. If not India, somewhere in Africa. You know, the whole notion that once you were out there taming the wild peoples of the world and, you know, bringing light and Christianity to them and all the supposed comforts of civilization, that with some people strange things would start happening and they would start becoming sympathetic to the culture that they were presumably lording it over. And, you know, let's say these people had gone native. The title that I use the title on this book because I just wanted to reverse it, kind of reverse the colonial cliche of this on, and put it in America, where I think for the purposes of the book, and sarcastically and ironically, going native means, you know, kind of dropping out of a middle class, a white middle class suburban society, and going on a murderous rampage. It's kind of a, you know, kind of grim joke at the same time. And I think it also implies losing all the trappings of society, of civilization, of the civilized self, really, and falling back into, say, a more primal mode and method of operating. While I was writing this book, the Jeffrey Dahmer case, I think, came to light. And the fact that I was working on a book like this at the same time something like this was playing itself out in reality, made for some very interesting thoughts. And one of them was, as you heard the details of what this man did and then how he lived, the business of, you know, lining up skulls up on the shelf in this little apartment, and I can remember there was almost like an altar. The thought occurred to me: this is a guy who's gone back to the old time religion. That he obviously lost his self, the socialized self, for whatever reasons, and ended up in a whole nother realm, and a realm that in some other cultures. The response to the behavior would not have been the same as it is here. I think largely that these impulses would have been ritualized, you know, in different ways.
I guess I don't have a sense of how much you haunt those lower realms that your characters do.
Well, is that important?
It is in a way, because it's one thing to talk abstractly about the culture's obsession with it, but with a writer, you really want to know where they are, too.
Yeah, but isn't that motivation suspect? And I think it is suspect because it also seems that another thing in this culture at the present moment, well, not just now, actually through the whole time America's been a country, this real deep-seated suspicion, if not outright hostility, to the imagination,
mm-hmm.
even to the fact that there is such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are now at a point where most people don't even believe there really is anything like that, or if there is, it's something very trivial. I think it's something that people think of on the same level as daydreaming. This is not what is meant by imagination in a creative literary sense. Daydreaming is daydreaming. Imagination is an active force, really, that I think is obviously centered in some kind of aspect of the will. And it's a very mysterious, thing, how it works. But I think that people who explore this and who get their own imaginations going, they provide you access to, realms of experience that you would not have otherwise, and aspects that can turn out to have quite extraordinary ramifications.
Well, Stephen Wright, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, well, thank you.
Stephen Wright's new novel is called Going Native. This is Fresh Air.